It is important to celebrate the actual achievements in our world. When fruits and flowers bloom and blossom, when children emerge into adulthood and, on their own volition, sit in the sukkah, study Torah, engage in the rituals of Judaism. But it is also essential to seek out the potential within every human being, potential that is implanted within us just as the potential for fire was planted within the world. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 69, Shammai and Hillel in Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. An amusing article in the New York Times business section from some years ago was titled, "Not Too Small to Appear on a Big No-Fly Watch List." The article tells the tale of John Anderson, a.k.a. Baby Jack, 2 years old, and his mother, Christine Anderson, as well as the rest of their family. The year was 2004, and the article tells us, quote, Jack, his mother, his brothers Joey, then 8, and Joshua, then 5, and their grandmother Susan, arrived at the airport in Minneapolis for a trip to Disney World. The woman at the ticket counter demanded, "Who is John Anderson?" Ms. Anderson recalled. She pointed at the baby stroller and said, "He's right here." The suspect, then 2 years old, blinked his big blue eyes and happily gummed his pacifier. "That baby's on the no-fly watch list," the agent said. His brothers became agitated. "We're not going to Disney World," one of them wailed, according to Ms. Anderson. After about an hour, the airline ascertained that the Jack in the stroller was not the Jack on the terrorist list, and the family made its flight. End quote. When you see a baby, what do you see? A more positive approach can be found in a story regarding the Second Temple sage Shammai, who was blessed with a grandson right before Sukkot. Shammai, the Mishnah reports, took the roof off the baby's nursery and replaced it with schach, the ritual roofing required for a sukkah, so that his grandson could, as it were, observe the commandment. This initially appears odd, as a newborn baby is not obligated to observe Sukkot, and treating a baby as an adult might make as much sense as treating him like a national security threat. But Shammai, apparently, was intending to emphasize not what his grandson was now, but what he had the capacity to be, and therefore instructed his family to celebrate and ponder the extraordinary positive potential that was inherent in this tiny tot. And this rabbinic account captures the nature of the man who would join Hillel in leading the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem, setting the stage for the development of Judaism far into the future. We have already recounted how for centuries the Sanhedrin was led by zugot, pairs of sages, thereby allowing for different approaches and perspectives to present themselves side by side. Upon assuming the leadership of the Sanhedrin in the Passover episode that we discussed last week, Hillel was initially paired with a mysterious man named Menachem, about whom we know little, but was then later joined by a brilliant man and fellow student of Shemaiah and Avtalion named Shammai. These two, Hillel and Shammai, comprised the last of the pairs, and it was in their time that real rabbinic debate began, for they seemed to differ not only about particular questions of Jewish law, but also at times in methodology and jurisprudence itself, so much so that two schools of students and legal decisors ultimately grew around them in Jerusalem. The debates between the schools became numerous, and many have attempted to decipher the principles at stake between them. But for now, we can turn to one interpretation of the disagreement, that of Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin, an approach that has been explicated by my teacher, Rabbi Mordechai Willick. According to this approach, Beit Hillel focuses on phenomena when they are made manifest in actuality, while the school of Shammai focuses on potentiality. Let me give several examples. One debate between the school of Hillel and the school of Shammai is regarding when the new year for trees begins, an agricultural date determining the beginning and end of the fiscal year for tithes of fruits. For the school of Hillel, the new year for trees begins on the 15th of Shavat, chosen because it is around then that trees in the Holy Land first begin to bud. But the school of Shammai suggests a different, earlier date, the first of Shavat, because by then, the rain necessary for blooming has already fallen. And while the botanical budding has yet to occur, the waters have already been absorbed by the roots of the trees, and thus the potential for future flowering is already inherent within them. Thus, actuality versus potentiality. Similarly, another debate. At Havdalah, the ritual marking the end of the Sabbath, a blessing is said over a flame, because in stark contrast to the myth of Prometheus, Jews describe fire not as stolen from the gods, but rather as benevolently given after the Sabbath to man by the one true God, a gift therefore remembered every Saturday night with a blessing over fire. But what blessing exactly to say? The school of Hillel blessed Borei Me'orei Ha'esh, expressing gratitude to the Almighty, He who creates the light of the flame, thanking God for creating the fire that is right in front of one's face in the here and now. The school of Shammai, in contrast, blessed Shebara Me'orei Ha'esh, blessed art thou, O Lord, who created the light of the flame, thanking God who in the primordial period endowed earth with the potential for fire. Thus, in these debates, a difference emerges. Hillel and his school often mark the actual achievements of sanctity in the here and now, whereas the focus of Shammai's school was on the search for and celebration of potentiality in God's creation and in religious life. I would add to these examples another famous description of the difference between Shammai and Hillel that is given by the rabbis. Whenever Shammai, the rabbis recount, came upon a wonderful morsel in the market, he would purchase it and save it for the Sabbath, because in every culinary encounter, Shammai saw the potential for its use in honoring the most sacred day of the week, thereby fulfilling throughout the week his own understanding of the fourth commandment in the Decalogue, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. But Hillel, the rabbis add, derech acheret yesh lo, he had a different approach. Whenever he found food worthy of eating, he would pronounce a blessing over it that day, fulfilling in his view another verse, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, bless the Almighty every day. While there are other approaches to analyzing this debate about food and the Sabbath, one can suggest that here too, the analysis we previously presented can be applied. Shammai's focus is on potential for full and supreme sanctification in the future, whereas Hillel is focused on sanctification in actuality in the here and now. This then is one description of their debates, one analysis of the approaches of the two schools. And even as rabbinic literature is saturated with an example of the disagreements between them, the Talmud also informs us that when it comes to the respective views of the school of Hillel and that of Shammai, Elu va'elu divrei Elokim chayim, these and these are the words of the living God. And what this means, perhaps, is that there is profound truth in both perspectives, the focus on potentiality as well as actuality. We ought to acknowledge actual achievements, but it is also important, pedagogically and otherwise, that we marvel at the miraculous potential with which the world, and indeed with which each individual, is endowed. For otherwise, without this focus on potential, we might miss something. Today, Hillel often receives more glory than Shammai. Because Hillel's genuine patience with the masses, even with, to use the technical term, nudges et nudniks, is contrast with that of Shammai by the Talmud, we are often in danger of failing to ascribe to Shammai the glory that he also deserves. And Shammai, along with Hillel, offers a profound legal and spiritual perspective. In my own explication of Shammai's views, I often like to cite to my congregants an example from Malcolm Gladwell's book Outliers, which discusses how society in some way causes and limits individual achievement. While we cannot forget that such achievements is often motivated by drive, intellect, and genius, at times, Gladwell notes, there are those whose potential is wasted or overlooked due to lack of opportunity or because there are many unwilling to see it. Here is one example from Gladwell that I often cite. This is from one review of the book. Quote, the book's first chapter explores the anomaly of hockey players' birthdays. In many of the best leagues in the world, amateur or professional, roughly 40% of the players were born in January, February, or March, while only 10% were born in October, November, or December. It's a profoundly strange pattern, with a simple explanation. The cutoff birth date for many youth hockey leagues is January 1st. So, the children born in the first 3 months of the year are just a little older, bigger, and stronger than their peers. These older children are then funneled into all-star teams that offer the best, most intense training. By the time they become teenagers, their random initial advantage has turned into a real one. At the championship game of the top Canadian Junior League, Gladwell interviews the father of one player born on January 4th. More than half of the players on his team, the Medicine Hat Tigers, were born in January, February, or March. But when Gladwell asked the father to explain his son's success, the calendar has nothing to do with it. He instead mentions passion, talent, and hard work, before adding, as an aside, that the boy was always big for his age. End quote. In other words, it was assumed that only those who initially emerge as gifted hockey players had the potential, the talent, and the drive to to succeed, whereas others did not. But in fact, because the cutoff date was so early, there were so many born a little bit later who may have been missed. It is important to celebrate the actual achievements in our world. When fruits and flowers bloom and blossom, when children emerge into adulthood and on their own volition sit in the sukkah, study Torah, engage in the rituals of Judaism. But it is also essential to seek out the potential within every human being, potential that is implanted within us just as the potential for fire was planted within the world. When we ponder the debates between these men, Hillel and Shammai, and their students, as well as these schools' relative impact on Jewish history, we can note a fascinating irony, one that my teacher, Rabbi Willig, points out. The students of Shammai were, in the words of the Talmud, mechadidei tvei, sharper, more brilliant than the students of the house of Hillel. Yet it was Hillel's school that would teach and consider the opposing views of Shammai and his students as well, believing that the path to truth lay in the willingness to being challenged to consider other approaches. And because of this, we are told in the Talmud, it was ultimately declared by a heavenly voice that though both perspectives embodied the words of the living God, nevertheless the law in almost all cases was to be in accordance with the school of Hillel. Shammai, and here I'm paraphrasing Rabbi Willig's insight, Shammai's school, which celebrated potential, seemed to be blessed with greater potential, greater brilliance. But in the end, its actual impact was less than would have been expected. Meanwhile, Hillel's humble house, because of its open-mindedness and willingness to being challenged, ultimately in actuality, had the larger impact. And this impact was indeed immense. It is not only that the law is in accordance with Hillel's school. Hillel's descendants led rabbinic Jewry for centuries, and, as we will see, it will be one of his youngest students, Yochanan ben Zakkai, who would determine the rabbinic response to the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. Yet to this day, both the views of Hillel and Shammai, as well as the views of both schools, are studied. For like other debates in the Mishnah and the Talmud, we see, in their words, a springboard for a dynamic discussion about the Word of God. In the world of learning, Shammai's contribution is a lasting one, and the millennia-long history of Jewish intellectual life is rooted in the Jerusalem of Hillel and Shammai. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.